please. Let's call the meeting to order. The meeting of the Community Services Committee is called to order. Present today are Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Shelton, Councilman Street, Councilmember Smiley, Councilman Cartier, Councilwoman Diller, and coming in the door is Councilman Bell. I'm Councilman Hollins, and taking the minutes for today's meeting is my legislative aide, Nikai Trailer. It's been brought to my attention that during our meetings, there is sidebar conversation that's always being recorded as well. And when that happens, not only is it difficult to record the minutes for the meeting, but it's also going out to the public. So I would ask council members to be cooperative and not have sidebar meetings. We have a very sensitive recorder here, and it's picking up a lot of the sidebar conversations that's going on during our meetings. We will move to the approval of the minutes from the April 28th, 2015 meeting.
Motion approved.
Second.
In favor?
Aye.
The minutes from the April 28th meeting are adopted. We will now move to the Route 9 Library Presentation Project Design and Schedule, and I would ask the General Manager, Sophia Hansen, if she would come forward and make the presentation with those that are going to be performing with the presentation along with her.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank all the present members of Council for the opportunity to present some information on the Route 9 Innovation Center. I personally don't think I've ever worked on anything this exciting. In all my years as planning, we were approving other people's projects. So it's nice to be on the other side of the table where you're in the design process of something that's really going to be built and you have a lot more input. And if I had to describe what you're going to see today in one word, I think that word would be inspirational. The design team here is consistently just team excellence. And I'm thrilled with what we have here. And in addition to the exterior presentation they'll have, they'll touch a little bit about the interior. And you'll see some absolutely remarkable features that you've never seen in a library. We'll have the traditional features, you know, the study rooms and the conference rooms and all the bookshelving. But we'll also have some things that we've never seen, they have in Denmark, the scriptorium, the bookitarium. We're going to have a Lego room inspired through the Lund, Denmark. And we'll also have some maker space and a sensory room for children with autism. So we are simply thrilled with what we have here today. And with that, I will turn it over to our team leader, Mr. Robert Mafia.
Thanks, Sophia. So thank you for having us here today to brief you on where we're at. And I was here, I guess, a couple of months ago. And I can tell you that we've made significant progress on the project. And we are, just so I can nip in the bud, we are on schedule, on track to meet all the deadlines that we projected going forward for getting construction started and getting construction completed so far. So with me today, I have our full design team, including Chuck Dobbs, who's our project manager, Jenny-Wan Saunders, who's one of our mechanical engineering designers, also lives in the community, and Phil Freelon, who is our head design, what I'll call a library guru architect, who is going to be making the bulk of our presentation here today. And with him is Derek Jones, who's one of the key design architects with Perkins & Will. So rather than spending any more time on that, I'm going to just let Phil come on up and brief you on where we are with the design. And it's about a short 15-minute presentation, then we're here for questions, and hopefully we can get you up to speed with anything you might need to know about where we're at and where we're going. Thanks.
Thanks, Bob, and I'm going to thank the council for inviting us to come and give you this update. And I have to say it's been a really collaborative and informative process. And yes, there's the design team, but I have to tell you, you have an excellent staff, beginning with Sophia Hansen, Diana Brown, and others. It's just been remarkable, the camaraderie and working together that we've had so far. And so my job here today, my goal is to bring you up to speed. I'm going to go through it fairly quickly because we'd like to get the Q&A. We know you have questions, so we're just going to hit the high points and tell you where we are and where we've been. And so Bob talked about our architectural team. Here's some of the other members. I'll let you read that for yourself. And once again, it's been a tremendous team effort. Now, some of the drivers, what are we trying to accomplish here? Well, We know that the scale of the neighborhood is going to be really important, and this is in a location that's going to have prominence from the highway. It's going to be a symbol for the community. That is certainly a driver. So the massing, how the building actually is configured on the site, and the blocks of space, is really beginning to take form, and you'll see that. And we're looking for an iconic visibility. It's not enough just to have a handsome or beautiful library. We think it needs to be more than that. It needs to be a beacon in the community and make that connection back to where this community that we're serving. And just to orient you a bit, I know you all are familiar. This is our site outlined in black, and the blue areas are residential, and we've got industrial areas in the sort of pinkish, and then you've got new plan development is the hashed red areas. So we know that this is an area of town that is really on the rebound, and we see this library as continuing to be a catalyst for that development and that rejuvenation of the neighborhood. And if you zoom in a little closer, you'll see in the red dashed area our site, which is quite suitable for the purpose that we have, and there'll be a combination of the Innovation Center and the library, and we'll see a little bit more about that as we go through. Now, we had interaction with the community. We've had three sessions so far, and we have another tonight. And so it's very important for us in our process, wherever we work in the country on community-based projects and libraries, to get that input from the community. We think it's crucial and vital that we understand what the desires and needs are of the community. So we engaged folks in three different sessions, but they began to indicate what they preferred. And those green and red dots are ways that we use to get that information. Folks to vote on imagery and notions that they think they would like to see in their particular library. And so one thing that came out of this process, and I'm paraphrasing here and sort of condensing some very, very good productive sessions, but one of the things we determined was that this idea of a beacon or verticality in the building to be that symbol, to be that lighthouse almost, is something that resonated with the community. This is a library of ours in Washington, D.C. in the Anacostia neighborhood, where we used a vertical light element. Other specific locations also take that notion of light as a symbol for the community. And so that's an idea that we tried to carry forward, among others. We also looked at what was unique about this community. There were a couple of things. We found the big tree. You all may have heard about this in the community. We actually sought that out and found the actual tree that is an icon in and of itself there. And we think there's meaning there, and that there's a way to tie back in to that particular moment in that community. And also the Delaware Memorial Bridge, another sort of vertical element in the neighborhood and close by. And so when we look at those two, you know, in proximity to each other, our site is really somewhat between the two. Here's the Delaware Memorial Bridge, and there's the location of the big tree. And so we thought this was a way to tie into the specifics of what's happening right there around us, to really mention the community. And when you think about a tree, you know, there are several things come to mind. First of all, you know, growth and the life of the tree, and knowledge. Oftentimes, trees are symbolic of knowledge and learning under the tree, right? Growth and change, protection, shelter from storms and so on. A community gathering place, a place of remembrance. And we think those are all notions that are very fitting for our library and a good tie-in with what we're trying to do. Now, when you look at our site, it really is quite remarkable. You have great visibility along Route 9 in the corner of Billview. And so we know that the building wants a presence there at Route 9, going both ways. And we'll see how that manifests. We have sketches of how this will look. And I wanted to give you the aerial view and show you that pedestrian access is really important, too. So people can come in along that colonnade of trees, and our entrance is right here. And they can continue on, moving to the east, to the Innovation Center, which is right adjacent. So we think the library and the Innovation Center together make for this whole cultural district that is really going to be a rejuvenation for the neighborhood. Pedestrians can also flow this way in multiple modes of transportation, whether it's children bicycling or walking or in strollers or just simply going by foot. And so many people will come by car. And we have the parking lot. There's a farmer's market area here, outdoor amphitheater. And there's seating. We have a cafe. So there's outdoor seating on a pretty day like this, maybe a little cooler, but you know, you'll be able to sit outside and enjoy the offerings of the cafe. Let's talk about the planning, because it's one thing to determine what are the needs of the library, what are the spaces, the sizes, and so on. Then how is that configured on the site? So if you think about the different blocks of space, this is just diagrammatic. So if you start to consider how people move through the building, and the blocks of space can move apart, there's a zone where you can actually pass between the different program areas. And so we think that very active zone is going to be key to a successful library. And the way this is working on the site, we just saw the site plan before, but diagrammatically, the library component is up by the street, Route 9, and we've got community gathering type spaces that are kind of a lead-in to the a connection to the Innovation Campus, and staff parking below and then other parking here. So that's how the major pieces of the program come together on the site. And what you'll see as we began to look at the different zones of the building, and we want that visitor experience, that beacon, you know, that light post and an iconic element to be where? By the entrance, right? And so people are dropping off and coming in through where you see experience. Then you've got the exploration aspect of it and the creative aspect there to the west. Then the connection elements, as I said before, are leading you over to the east and the Innovation Center as a real link back to that part of the program. I won't go into specific detail about the plan, but I will say this. And Sophia mentioned the regular spaces that you would have in any library, like the reading room, study and tutoring, computer access, teen spaces, circulation desk, you know, children's space. These are things that you find in the typical library, and we certainly have them here. It's important to have these major spaces. You've got community meeting space, library offices. So what you see in the gold circles and ovals are the conventional, if you will, library spaces. What we've done, what we've added to, and Sophia mentioned some of this, are the really exciting additional programs like the scriptorium. You know, you've got the vintage room, the opportunity center. These are places that a typical library doesn't have. We have them here. The Maker Lab, Sensory Lab, the STEM classroom. Here's your Lego room, the Bookatorium, and a Black Box Theater and Cafe. Now, we've done these all over the country, and the typical branch library is like 20,000 square feet. We're up over 40,000. So you can see that it really is more of a community center, not simply a library. And it's very, very exciting the way this is developing. So the massing, when we say massing in character, I said a few moments ago that it's not just enough to have a building that's a handsome wrapper around some books. Okay, we want the building to stand for something and to tie back into those themes we were talking about. And so if you look at the approach from Hillview of turning in, you can see that vertical element, that light element we mentioned earlier. That's your entrance. You've got the Black Box Theater to the left, the cafe, and here are your reading rooms and other program areas to the right. And tying it all together is a roof element that really does stitch all these different components under one roof. Now, if you're looking back toward, you know, ninth, and then you see the approach with the Black Box Theater to your left and the entrance and the reading room. It's just another view, and then the vertical element is something that is consistent. No matter where you are, you get a sense of orientation by that light element in our plan. And then here, looking from Route 9 northbound, as you approach by car, this is super graphics, you know, library, Route 9, you know, just announcing where you are. And that beacon is still seen beyond where the parking lot is over on the other side of the building. So this building has no back. It has no rear loading dock area that's unsightly. Every elevation is handsome. Every elevation speaks to the character of this building. So finally, we've got the Route 9 southbound view. Once again, you can get a glimpse of the tower in the background. You know where to go. It's drawing you in visually. And back to the site plan, where it all pulls together. So, the timeline, where are we right now? Well, we've got another community meeting tonight. That's going to happen. Today's the 23rd of June. The groundbreaking is coming up. That's September 22nd. So mark your calendar. There's a rain date, but I don't want to confuse you, but it's not raining. It's September 22nd. And the grand opening is scheduled for December of 2016. Just a short time away when you think about it. So we are extremely excited. I want to open it up for Q&A. If you have any questions, we'll get the site plan up and we can go back to any of the slides that you'd like. I want to just run through this quickly. We can go back and discuss any element of this that you wish. And our team is here to help with Q&A. So thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. Sorry about my scratchy throat, getting over a little bit of a cold. And so, open for questions.
Let me recognize Councilman Tackett, who has joined us, as well as Councilman Powers. And Councilman Redder is with us. Any questions from any members of council? Councilman Street, Councilman Cartier.
I don't know how I convey in words how I feel and how much I appreciate what the administration has done, what this council has done, pushing this up on the schedule, putting it into the capital plan in the first place, and then pushing it up on the schedule. And the fact that the community, to your credit and your leadership, has had so much input. I mean, they decided about the lighting. They had, you know, they spent a couple hours a night deciding and going through the process of decision making. When I first saw this, the only reason I didn't sit in that child's office and cry was because she was sitting there. So I'm just overwhelmed with joy and excited for the community. And I want to thank everybody. At the end of the day, everybody deserves credit, because not for council, it wouldn't happen. Not for the administration, it wouldn't happen. Not for the community being involved, it wouldn't happen. And all I asked for was the library. And y'all took it to a whole nother level that's unimaginable until I saw the pictures. And I can't wait. Thank everybody very, very much.
Councilman Cartier?
Yeah, I particularly like the consideration of the wider built environment and natural context for, inspiring the design. I think that's really very artful and, progressive idea. And you said this is about 40,000 square feet, so... it serves like a regional purpose, and in a very underserved area, I think it's called for. My question would be, what type of on the grounds are there going to be any points of gathering where people can go out on a nice day and sit down and maybe read or socialize, that kind of thing?
It's almost a park setting. And I mentioned very briefly, we'll come back to it. There's a farmer's market area here. You can see how heavily planted this is. There's a library park on the corner. You have the seating area for the cafe here. There's an outdoor amphitheater. So the concept of a landscape is to really engage, not simply have a parking lot.
Right.
To have programmable activities there. Such as the ones I mentioned, and more. Bob, did you have anything to add?
Yeah, I tell you, one of the things that we built into this, that was conscious, was to develop a walking path from Hillview to the entrance, but also continuing it through. That will also continue through on the innovation campus. So basically, all the communities can have this nice walking path. It's kind of a nice, not a park, but a respite kind of a place where you can take a walk on a nice evening and have be in some rain and get out of the asphalt.
Excellent. Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would I couldn't agree more with Jay, and as far as where we are and where we're going right now, but I think one of the greatest challenges that we're going to have is the public safety of the folks that come there or that want to come there and want to feel safe. And we're investing a tremendous amount of money. And not only was it, you know, my district, I grew up there. Okay, I was the fire chief in the community, the oldest community along Route 9, Holloway Terrace. But I think some of the things that we really need to take a look at, and I know that I've asked for statistics, I know the fire department has asked for statistics, is we have a disease that's at that main intersection of Route 9 and Memorial Drive and West Avenue. And I have mentioned, and I'll continue to mention, that I think we need to rid that intersection of the hotel motels that are there, just like we did Lord Dilawar over on DuPont Highway. Because that is where the disease evolves from the standpoint of drugs and prostitution. And it's a haven. And I know that in some cases it serves some Section 8, but we're actually doing, I think, a disservice to some of the Section 8 housing by locating them in this infested area. So it is definitely a problem, and as a co-chair of public safety and a resident that grew up there and graduated from Dilawar High School, this is significant, and it's important to our communities. It's important to this county. But if we don't take further initiative to eliminate some of the problems that we have that surround what should be a gem, you're going to have folks that aren't going to feel comfortable and aren't going to want to go there and aren't going to feel safe. And you can have a cop sitting at the main desk. That's not going to do it. So I'm just mentioning this because I think this is a greater challenge of this council and this county to take an area of the county and rid it of some of the problems that exist there today that have really caused the deterioration of the Route 9 corridor and the safety of the folks. And all you got to do is attend targeted analytical policing meetings. I can't attend, but my legislative aide goes, and I get all the reports and stats, and I can tell you that Holloway Terrace is constantly mentioned now. We had a park that was overtaken by prostitutes and everything. So, I mean, it is an ongoing problem. It's not going to be rid overnight, but we're making a tremendous investment in a very underserved area, but we have to be concerned about what surrounds it. And it's more than just cleaning up the area. It's ridding some of those properties, you know, off of that corner. And when you see what's there and you see some of the things that have been there, it's a disservice without the library. So with the library, it'll continue to be a disservice if we don't take a very proactive approach.
Can I respond? Yeah. I could not agree with you more. And our county executive and the chief administrative officer actually called a meeting 2 months ago with the police department. We haven't brought the attorney general's office in yet, but there's already been some strategic raids done along that corridor. When we did our walkability study, which a car accident actually happened while we were assessing the safety with the state, which has never happened in the history of a walkability study in Delaware, there were prostitutes and drug deals while we're in a large group. Like, people didn't even feel uncomfortable when you see a large group kind of looking official. We had vests on, and we're about 30 of us doing business right out in the open. So you're absolutely right. But the administration recognizes that. And the way we're approaching this library is a community revitalization effort, meaning we're taking all of the government services that we have, and if we don't have them, we approach the agency or entity that does. So we are aggressively working on that. There are no Section 8 residents in the hotel, in the hotels, but they do get vouchers, and they concentrate these people there. So in the event that after these raids and different things that we have to shut a hotel down, our department has to be in a position to take these families like they did with Dilawar and relocate them. So we've already gotten the information from land use, and land use is in as well. While we're doing the police enforcement, we're also doing code enforcement. So that's already happening. There's been an article in the paper about one of the specific raids, but the county executive recognizes that and is putting efforts and money and time and energy into that issue. The second item you addressed was a police officer at a desk. We're actually going to have a police station, an off-site station with officer space there. And it's really, the officers came in today to meet to kind of get some feedback with their space. And they were truly impressed that we're giving them such nice space that they're going to want to be there. They're going to want to be involved in the community. And one of the things they asked for, and with the incident that happened in Dallas, is bulletproof glass. So that if something happens in this public space, and this is something trending towards the future, having a place, a safe place, where our officers can't be attacked, but can actually maintain the safety and the integrity of the building. So everything you said, we agree with, and we are aggressively working on all of those issues.
I'm aware of the administration. I've spoken prior to this with them on some of these concerns. And I think we should be working towards closure and eradication.
First, we have to document. First, you have to do the...
Well, understood. And we also need to take a look at the burden that it's placed on our paramedics, our volunteer fire basic life support, that almost on a daily basis is in and out of them hotels. And it's a drug haven. Crime haven, and you know, so what I'm saying is that we as a whole total council need to understand that we have got to make a commitment, public safety wise, community wise, with this investment, that we have to change that area. We've got to change the mindset of that area. Folks come to that area because they know they can get away with things right now. They got prostitutes walking up to people that are in the drive up at McDonald's. So these are the issues that we face. The building has a tremendous amount of glass application. You can't bulletproof the whole building. Okay, and a cop inside the building isn't going to stop 12 people the other afternoon, females, fighting at a bus stop opposite the Bolarama on Newcastle Avenue. So these are the things that I think we have to understand, that it's a hot spot. And I know that there's initiatives, there's work being done on it. We got a long way to go.
Yes.
And, you know, and the co-chairs of public safety are committed. The district council person today is committed. And I think all of us are committed. But folks need to hear it and be aware that we're building something that's second to none. But we're building in an area surrounded right in that immediate area, the businesses, the car lots, the old Mrs. Winters, vacant buildings, okay? Every car must go. So what, some other slumlord can come in and put trash on the corner? So we've got some real issues that this council and land use, and we have to tackle.
Absolutely.
And if this is going to be successful and people are going to feel safe and comfortable going there with their children and everything, so.
Councilman Street.
And the exchange between the two of them made my point for me. Thank you. Thank both of you.
Thank you, sir.
Well, I just want to say that I agree with Councilman Bell that there are serious challenges there, social issues along that section of Route 9. In some place I go every Sunday morning to church. We're right adjacent to that, right across on this site, and that's very real. We have to address that holistically. To get rid of that element in that community, if we're going to make this kind of investment. The only thing I would add is that, you know, I heard Section 8, and I know how families who live in Section 8, Section 8 clients are demonized, but I would not suggest that it's because of Section 8 families who live in that area, because Section 8 is portable. People on Section 8 can live any place in this country. They can live in the Ritz. So it's the behavior, it's not necessarily associated with folk who are in need of a Section 8 voucher. So I think we need to be clear about that in our discussion. I mean, I've witnessed the prostitutes there, leaving there on Sunday mornings even. They don't stop. So I'm very aware of that, and I think we need to be very aggressive about cleaning that up as we invest in that community to make it an asset to the people of that community. And otherwise, it's a regional destination, so other folk will come there, I do believe. I've even heard people say, well, the county is investing all of this money just for them to tear it down. It's offensive to me, because when they say them, I know who they're talking about. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think we have to do our due diligence to make certain that we are, in fact, being very holistic in providing for a very safe place for everyone to be able to visit, including the people who call that area home. Councilman Cartier.
Yes. I just wanted to point out a couple, I think, important approaches when it comes to improving the area generally. Number one, it's going after the property owners that are the problem property owners, making them legally responsible for what transpires on the property they own. And we have, ordinances and techniques for doing that. The other thing is, I would encourage the legal department to study the Delaware Code Chapter 9, because in my recollection, there is slum and blight clearance condemnation powers given to Newcastle County for, chronic problem properties. And I think it's in Delaware Code Chapter 9. I don't know that we've necessarily enacted it. Of course, if you condemn a property, you have to compensate the owner for it. But if you've got, some long-standing bad property owners that are bad neighbors facilitating, criminal activity through their neglect, then we got to, really wave that flag at them and let them know we're serious.
I think that this government has shown the will and the courage in that area. I think when Councilman Bell mentioned the old De La Warr Hotel, which was really the tower of corruption for the DuPont Highway for years and years until this administration, when County Executive Gordon was in office before, we actually tore it down, and everyone knows what's there now. So I think we've demonstrated the will to do that. It has to be legal, but I don't think we can stop short of doing that going forward, especially with the investment that this government is making in that area now. Councilman Street.
I just have one thing. The biggest problem is not who lives there and how they live there. The biggest problem is drug addiction. The biggest enemy is heroin, crack cocaine. And I would hope in a holistic plan that we would work with the other agencies, state agencies, that do drug rehabilitation and drug prevention as part and parcel to the solution. Because the young ladies are out there working, they're working to feed an addiction. And sad proliferation of heroin and its rise throughout the state, throughout the country, is something we're going to have to deal with. And I agree wholeheartedly. And the fact of the matter is, there's hotel, motel, and then there's hotels. And we got the hotels out there that have got to be dealt with, but if you don't address the addiction and that aspect of the problem, then that only leaves those who are out there doing it to have to go somewhere else. And so I would just hope that we try to be all-inclusive and holistic and trying to find a resolve to the problem.
And how are you spelling hotel, Thompson Street?
Like in my garden.
I just don't answer.
Like in my garden.
That way. And any other comment, question from members of council? Seeing none, I do have a question about the Innovation Campus. I heard it mentioned that you go, I guess it was east to get there. Is it going to come online consistently with the library, or is that going to be construction later on?
That'll happen later on. We're in negotiations with parties that are interested in developing on our site.
Okay, so and the beacon of light, the construction of that, what is that?
Well, what we've done in the past is use translucent glass panels that are lit from the inside, so that's one way to achieve that effect. And there are a number of different ways of doing it. That's one that we've used successfully in other locations.
Thank you. Councilman Street.
Just one more thing. I am so glad that the architectural team includes one of my children. And I have told him the HVAC system in this building better not malfunction like the one in the public safety building.
So we're gonna move to the public now. As the council is done with questions and comments. Yes.
Marion Stewart, When the Brandywine 100 Library was being built, Councilwoman Karen Vineski was determined it should have some sort of food service, and it duly had a room dedicated to food service, and it wasn't seemingly any time at all before it closed because there wasn't enough business. Do you know that you'll have enough business for this cafeteria or cafe or whatever in the new building?
Sophia Hansen, General Manager of Community Services. One of the mandates from the county executive was he wanted a cafe. And I knew we had tried it in Newark and we had tried it at Brandywine and we weren't successful at either site. So we were actually in North Copenhagen at the Bibliotheque Library, and we stumbled upon, and this was an area in transition. It was an area being redeveloped. It had a lot of immigrants in it, a very poor area, and they had built this beautiful library there, and their cafe was amazing. Wonderful food, great service. So, you know, the person that was giving us the tour, we said, you know, how is your library operating such a wonderful cafe? Like, we've tried and we failed. The librarian staff didn't run it. They worked with a third party who runs a food business, and they came in and they run it. They understand food management, placing orders, and things of that nature. And they also added a social component to it where they were working with a group of disabled children. So with our cafe, our idea is to, we're building a nice cafe. It's how many square feet?
A little less than 3,000.
3,000, yeah. So the size is extremely appropriate for a cafe where you can actually prepare all types of foods. And so we're partnering with an agency that's going to work with some group, children aging out of foster care or children on the spectrum for autism. And one of the other components for the cafe is it won't just function as a cafe, it'll be a nutrition and educational center. So we can actually operate the way we're designing it, educational classes on food nutrition for children, adults, teens within the kitchen. And that's something that they do at the Philadelphia Public Library. But they don't do it in the cafe that's run by Project Home. They do it upstairs. They tore down walls from the library space upstairs to make that their training center. We're combining it all in one.
If I could add, in our experience around the country, we see that the neighborhood libraries are evolving into something akin to a Barnes & Noble, where folks who come to these places are expecting some food service now, as opposed to 10, 15, 20 years ago. So it's a trend, I think, is pointing to a positive outcome for the cafe.
Council members, if you will let me get to Deputy Sam Guy, he was trying to speak earlier.
No, I was just pointing at
him. Oh, you were just pointing. Okay, thank you. Councilman Redder, then Councilman Smiley.
Thank you. Ms. Hanson, on this cafeteria or food service, you said it's going to be probably a third party. How do they do that in other places? Is it a subsidy of money that's going to be paid to these people? How are the people going to be buying their own food from them? How's it going to be set up?
They run their, we do an RFP and they come in and they run their own restaurant. That's how it would be done. We haven't worked out all the specifics of any kind of rent we would charge or all of that. At this library, they waive that. They let the people leave the space to be able to have food for the patrons and for the staff. And also, it's because it's a mission of, at this specific library, of training people with disabilities.
Yeah, but see, we already have a place where I believe it's a 10-year contract or so, where we don't hardly make any money at all, the county.
It would be a nonprofit.
And it's called Rockwood. They got a contractor in there who's doing everything, and we have to get permission from them to use it. That's the way the contract reads.
That contract wasn't negotiated under this administration.
No, I didn't say it was.
This contract will be well
I didn't say it was. Prepared. I'm not blaming no okay. administration, but what I'm saying is we got to be cautious because it's an outside vendor. And with that, I mean, we just got going over the finances, and we're looking at a lot of things that the state wants to do to us. And with that, you know, we don't want to be losing any more money than we have to. Believe me, I'm all for the library. I'm not against the library at all. It's how we do this and how we set it up that we don't get caught.
And I couldn't agree with you more about that contract. We have trouble accessing the site for our Great Women event. It had to be held later in the month because we couldn't get the dates that we wanted. So we'll have a properly reviewed contract before we move forward.
Well, I think before the contract gets signed and sealed, I think it'll come before this council.
We'll bring it for absolutely. Duly noted.
Councilman Smalley?
I don't want to lose focus of the great project that's going on. It was to say I do support it, but yeah, since you bring the topic up of the cafe, I hope it works out. And I'm not into which administration did what. The bottom line is, we have one at the government center right now that we subsidize and pay every year.
Right.
So we're paying money for that. And it's about as much of a skeleton as you can find as far as what's offered and the amount of people working there. So this will be different. Hopefully it will have greater foot traffic with the public, which will make it work. But bottom line is, either the independent contractor can make it work, or they can make it vacant for the next person. That's my opinion. Talking about who's in there, I do know, and hopefully there will be some partnership here, that within the Colonial School District, in specific George Reed, special needs children work in the help and assist in the food service there in the cafeteria and all. So maybe there could be a transition that could help them progress out into the public food service with something like this, if it works out.
Sophia Hansen, Community Services. Dr. Blakey, the superintendent for the Colonial School District, is actually on our working group committee. So we're exploring all avenues of where does the nonprofit get their students from. All that we'll be working all of that out. And but to your question about making it successful, other people have done it. Project Home, if you want to drive up to Philadelphia, Project Home, Sister Mary Scullion operates a wonderful cafe. It's the Homepage Cafe. I love the name. I went and visited it. It's very small, so it's not a full service. So they had to build space upstairs. So we're going to combine the two all in one location. So I think we're taking and learning from other people.
I understand we're visiting, we're finding, we're liking, we're incorporating, but we're still subsidizing something at the government center. And that's not profitable for them yet.
We're not looking to make a profit. We're just looking to have a great training
profitable
program.
Profitable to the point that
they,
we don't have to cut them a check.
Right, absolutely. That's
break even, right. I'm fine with break
that
even.
That would be our goal.
I'm even fine with if we let them have a free lunch while they work.
That
don't
would
push
be
it much further. But let's not lose focus. My point is, let's not lose focus with the cafeteria. There are too many other good things for the public that are going on in this thing that we need to make sure move forward.
And we really expect, it's hard to predict the type of foot traffic you'll get anywhere, but we expect people to come from all over. I mean, anyone with a disabled child will come to the sensory room at some point for some of our literacy programs for those children. The Lego room, I get a little excited, but Ezra Jack Keats actually, when we did our budget hearing, we reported that we had gotten permission to do a Lego mural dedicated to the first book to feature African Americans on the cover, The Snowy Day. His foundation approved our request within 24 hours. It took us a while to get through to Eric Carle, probably the most famous book ever written for children, The Very Hungry Caterpillar, and on Friday he emailed me, or his assistant, I'm not sure, but we got The Hungry Caterpillar. People are going to come. You pay $30 to see the brick by brick exhibit at the Franklin Institute. And that, children, I think, is the discount, maybe $26. This is free. So we're going to have the traffic. We're going to have the population we need to support the cafe, along with the staff and local residents. And if I could just comment, no one asked this question, but I've worked in planning all of my life and dealt with civic groups. I've never seen, and this is, we have every race represented at these meetings. I've never seen such dedicated and highly interested people in having something like this in their community. And we really expect it. So it's going to be people from in the community and outside the community. So we expect the cafe to be extremely successful.
Well, you had me. You talked about The Hungry Caterpillar. God, what memories.
You don't like The Hungry Caterpillar?
I have read that book and read that book and read that book.
You know what? We're going to sign you up to read it at the ground right here.
Are you kidding me? There he is, through the puppet. Think I don't know. Oh, yeah. Been there, did that. Jeez almighty. I was screaming for Dr. Seuss and he didn't want it.
I'm willing to support the concept, including the cafe. I think that we have to be creative. We have to think differently. And if it doesn't work, then we'll have to revisit it. And someone mentioned the partnerships. I mentioned Dr. Blakey in Columbia School District. There's an outstanding culinary program at William Penn High School. You read about them pretty often in the newspapers about what they're doing there. So I think there's a lot of opportunity, and I don't think we should cut ourselves short. I think we have a teaching moment of what happened with the contract at Rockwood. I don't expect us to repeat that. So I'm willing to move forward with all that's included in this project, and I believe great things are going to happen. And we'll continue to have debate around it, but I have a lot of confidence in what you'll have done. Any further comment from Councilman Bell?
Just a real quick one, sitting here thinking 2016, December 2016, are we poised budgetary-wise and personnel staffing-wise to be able to adequately provide staffing for the facility so that it is a success? Is it in addition to, or is it taking away from?
We'll be doing some new hiring, and we'll also, and I don't want to get into too many specifics.
We like specifics.
Because we haven't decided anything, but we have some, when you made the comment about Corbett, there was another contract that had it was a very different level of funding there. So, you know, we'll be looking at everything for next year and making sure we have the staff available for the site.
No further questions from council? Any further questions from the public? Councilman Street?
I have to keep saying thank you. Everybody at this table, administration, designer, and that's going to get better.
Any further comment?
I'll quit while we're ahead.
Thanks for having us.
I beg your pardon?
Thank you very much for stopping.
Thank you. Is there anything on the other from members of council? Motion?
Motion adjourned.
Second.
Thank you very much.